We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Lisa Schmucke, the founder of EdWeb, and it's my honor to introduce our presentation today with the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation. This is actually our 20th interview with recipients of the Medal of Honor, which has been such an honor for us to be able to host these interviews. And we're here with Kathy Metcalf, the Vice President of Education for the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation, and our honorary guest today, Robert Majewski, who has received the Medal of Honor for his service in the Marines in Vietnam. And we're also joined by Steel Canyon High School in California. So they're going to be joining us and asking some questions of the recipient so that we can have more of a dialogue back and forth. Thank you all for coming. And we'd like to just start by taking a poll to see who is here. I know many of the teachers join with students in their class. So we've pulled up a poll here and just click on the circle next to what level of school you're signing in from and if you're a teacher here with your class. This is great. We'll just wait a few minutes so everybody gets a chance to tell us where they're coming from if they're there with their students. We actually have over 105 educators joined in, and we love it when you come with your class. So actually looks like it's mostly high school, but also elementary and some middle school and other. Type in the chat if you're from a different school, type of school, or if you have a different role in education. Librarian, preschool, wonderful. That is great. All right, I'm going to close the poll. And Kathy, we're really looking forward to the interview with you and Robert Majewski. So.
Thank you, Lisa. Good morning, everyone, and good morning, Steel Canyon. We want to wave in. We have changed the process and format of these interviews over the years. We are, for the first time, not only piping in a high school, but Bob and I today are sitting in the classroom with the students. So we thank Steel Canyon for letting us be here today, and we're looking forward to a conversation with you. For our internet audience, I want to reiterate, as I always do on these webinars, the purpose of Medal of Honor Foundation conducting these webinars is as part of the Medal of Honor Society's character development program, we are looking to capture primary source material for our students to use. So these webinars today, as a conversation with Medal of Honor recipient, provide students an opportunity to get to know somebody that they wouldn't otherwise have an opportunity to do. And we also record these webinars and archive them on our website and the EdWeb website. So, and if we go from a different location, last month it was archived also on the National World War II Museum website. So that material is now out there for students to use when they're doing reports, research papers, and just for the general public to have that rich historical material that they wouldn't otherwise have. So as we take questions today, first and foremost, those of you who are sending in questions online, student questions are most important. And we've got a lot of prepared questions here in the classroom, both that were sent in previously online and from these students, and then teacher questions, and then general public. If we can get to your questions, we will, but an hour goes really fast. So that being said, I'm going to go ahead and get started. The students here have already seen your living history, so they know a little bit, and they know about your Medal of Honor action. I would encourage our online audience, if you have not done so, watch Bob Majewski's Living History and read his citation online. I know you can't do that right at this moment while you're watching that, but if you have not done so, go back and read that for the details, because our focus today is on what makes a Medal of Honor recipient and what are the characteristics that we see embodied in the Medal of Honor, not necessarily what specifically happened on the battlefield. Okay, and to that end, somebody wrote in ahead of time, one of the first questions we got was, is this appropriate for a third grade audience? I saw a lot of elementary schools out there. I think that there will not be anything here that will not be appropriate for a third grade audience. If your eighth graders can sit still for an hour, I want to hear about it afterwards. So, yay. Let's get started. We're going to have the students here ask some questions about your time growing up in Wisconsin. Would you go ahead and start?
Hi, I'm Jalen, and my question for you today is, what is the greatest lesson your parents taught you as a child?
My greatest lesson taught as a child growing up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, was that my parents tried to teach me to always be fair, to be honest, and to do the right thing, which isn't always easy when you're a child growing up, but nevertheless, those were some of the thoughts that were exposed to me as I was growing up. My father and mother came over from Poland at about the turn of the century, so our work ethic and our family and was such that these were very important attributes as far as my growing up, that you do the best job that you possibly can, whether or not you're in school or you're in some sort of other employment. So that was probably the most important lesson that I learned. But always to treat people as you would like to be treated and to treat people fairly.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had three sisters, one of which is still living, and I had one brother. Of course, my parents obviously are deceased, but we all grew up as a big family in Milwaukee, and very loving family, very caring family. So I was very fortunate to have the parents and the siblings that I had.
I think I saw that your nephew, Kevin, has logged on for the webinar today and also sent an announcement to, is it Pulaski High School you graduated
Pulaski
from?
Pulaski High School, yes.
So a shout out to Pulaski High School. I hope you were able to join us. Can we go for another question?
I'm Billy, and you mentioned in your video that your family ate around the table and that was good for you. Why do you feel that way?
We ate around the table, and what was the other part?
Why was that good for you?
Well, it was good because around the table at dinner time, and dinner time was really difficult for me because I played a lot of sports in high school. But nevertheless, even though my father worked and my mother didn't, why we did sit around the table. And this was discussion of what happened during the course of the day in school and how we were doing in sports, how the school was doing in sports. So it was a means of communications and finding out what the family had done that particular day.
What sports did you play?
Played football, I played basketball, and I played baseball. I was a 118-pound quarterback. I played forward on the basketball team, and I played third base on the baseball team. In all the sports, I was never going to be a superstar. I was never going to go to the NFL or play any of those college sports. But at that time in the 1950s, when you were in high school, everybody was much smaller than they are today. This student that was just here who played football for your high school, that was unheard of when I played. So, in fact, as I was watching him, he kind of frightened me a little bit when I mentioned football, because it'd probably break every bone in my body if I played today.
Great answer. Thank you. We have another question.
My name's Cameron. Would you consider yourself to be a troublemaker when you're younger, or were you like a by the books?
Were you a troublemaker when you were a kid, or were you a by-the-book student?
No, I was pretty much by the book. My parents didn't have too much problem with me. First of all, my dad was, I won't say a disciplinarian, but discipline was a big thing in his life, growing up in a foreign country, obviously. And So he projected that discipline toward me and wouldn't tolerate too much nonsense. In fact, I can remember one day at the dinner table, I was eating my dinner, and I had a comic book on the table while I was eating, and you know, that did not go over well because I got whacked on the side of the head with that comic book while the whole family was around eating and talking. So that was a lesson well learned. I never did that again.
Some of us were raised with the, in the old days, we were more afraid of getting in trouble at home than we were at school.
Yes. Yes.
And if we got in trouble at school, it would have been trouble at home.
So. Yeah. And besides, I like school. In fact, I can't ever remember missing a day in school. And if I had to start all over again, why, I'd be glad to join all of you here at this school, believe it or not.
That's great. Also, you know, you probably had to behave in school to remain eligible to play sports.
You did. You had to have at least a 2.0 grade point average and mind your P's and Q's. So, yeah, you had to behave yourself. If you got into any trouble, you weren't going to stay with the team very long.
Great, great question. Great answer. We have another question.
My name's Liam. Who were your heroes or the people that you looked up to while growing up, and who are your heroes now?
So who were your heroes while you were growing up, and who are your heroes now?
Well, my heroes certainly were my parents because of their values as a family and as parents and how they brought up my sisters and my brother and myself. So they were probably my number one heroes. I had three brothers-in-law who were in the military, who served in not only World War II, but one was at the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. And so my brother-in-laws, as far as their military service, were very instrumental in my bringing up. However, my family, my father was not in the military. And as I was growing up, I really did not have much interest in the military. So, but today, my heroes, I like the Packers, although they've fallen on hard times. And of course, the University of Wisconsin, which is the school that I attended, have also fallen on hard times as far as their sports teams are concerned. But nevertheless, I respect all people in the military for the job that they've done over the last 15, 20 years.
So let's, and I'll continue to welcome questions about growing up in childhood and certainly about values, but let's move on a little bit to the military. I know the question's going to come up. You joined the Marine Corps. You weren't drafted, right? And why did you choose the Marine Corps as opposed to one of the other branches?
Well, when I was at the University of Wisconsin, I was going to be a school teacher, upper elementary school teacher. And at Wisconsin at that time, you had to take 2 years of compulsory ROTC. I have to tell you, I disliked every second that I was in ROTC. And then as you got to be a junior and a senior, you had to do some student teaching. And one day, the teacher at a school that I was doing my student teaching asked me to teach a class on vibration. So I had the kids take out their 12-inch wooden ruler, put it on the desk, let half of it go over the edge of the desk and hold the other half down with their hand. And then I said, well, take your right hand and then just kind of bend the ruler and let it bounce up, and you can feel the vibrations. Well, you can imagine what happened. You know, for third graders, sword fights, people whacking one another with these rulers. The rulers were breaking, and so on. And so I went back to collecting papers and sharpening pencils during about the next month of my student teaching. And then one day, about a month later, the teacher asked me to teach a class on music. Well, this was a simple, I think about a 3-bar song, and I can't even sing in the shower. So let alone, you know, teaching kids a song. So at that point, I kind of discovered that I was never going to be a very good elementary school teacher. And then one day I saw this Marine recruiter walking around on campus. And so I decided, well, as a lark, I'll just go down and talk with him and see what he has to say. So after talking with him and after graduation, about the next month, I went into the Marine Corps on active duty and stayed there for the next 30 years. One thing I didn't count on, however, was about 9 years later, laying in a ditch about a couple hundred meters from North Vietnam. But you always have to expect the unexpected.
Wow, what a transition.
Yes.
From flying rulers in a classroom, yes, to a ditch in Vietnam. Oh my goodness. All right. Well, this kind of opens us up for any questions regarding Marine Corps years, Vietnam. Who's got a question related to these things? Somebody?
While you were deployed in Vietnam, what were the things that you missed most about back home?
Oh, good question.
It is a good question. Well, certainly the thing that you think about most is your family back home. And you know, being in that kind of a situation, your relationships not only with your family but with friends and loved ones, and you miss things such as school. You miss things such as television, such as radio programs. So there's a lot of things that you miss, but it's just the distance between the United States and, for example, Vietnam, which is thousands upon thousands of miles, you know, it's just a, kind of a lonely feeling, but just something that if you're in the military, you're going to have to get used to.
Did your Medal of Honor action happen on your first tour of duty in Vietnam?
Yes, I was in Vietnam for about 4 months before an operation that we took part in, which was right up near the militarized zone between the North and the South countries of South Vietnam. And so it was a very short period of time before I got acclimated to Vietnam and the environment there, because it is so hot that you're constantly wet, and it takes about 4 to 6 weeks to become acclimated to that type of a climate, particularly if you come from a colder climate here in the United States. It's the wetness, it's the humidity, it's always 100% humidity practically, and the temperature is always around 100 or even over. So you're always fighting the environment. It's always either too hot in war, or it's too cold in war, or it's too far away, or it's too close. So there's all these other things that are on the periphery that make it a little bit more difficult than the actual fighting.
Now, unlike many of our soldiers who were drafted and sent overseas rather quickly, you had been in the Corps for, 9 years before you went overseas?
Yes, I went in the Marine Corps in 1957 and then was in Vietnam in 1966 and 1967. So I was much older than the 18 or 19-year-old Marine or soldier or sailor or airman that you found in Vietnam at that particular time. So,
do you think that the training that you had during all those years in the Corps played a part in your ability to both survive and to stay in control and under command in that time?
Absolutely. I think you'll find that if you talk to any of the services, that the training that they've gotten, not only when they're in recruit training or basic training, before they ever get into a war situation, is extremely helpful. And but the thing I want to emphasize here is that somebody who is 17 in some cases and 18 in some cases, 19 and 20, are just absolutely amazing when it comes to a wartime environment. The only reason that I'm here today is because of the privates and privates first class and corporals and sergeants that were with me in Vietnam. So in essence, I had a lot of time and a lot of help in getting this medal. So I really kind of wear it for those men that I had, and Navy corpsmen that I had in Vietnam. They're the ones that really got this for me. So I wear it for them.
Thank you. Another question?
My name is Lala. And what was it like emotionally and physically the day you received the Medal of Honor?
What was it like emotionally and the day I received the
Medal of Honor? I received it from President Johnson in 1968. And President Johnson is a guy who's about 6 feet four and weighs about 200 pounds. And of course, at that time, and now even now, I'm 5 feet eight. So I was always looking up at the president. But the environment is somewhat kind of like being in the fog. You really don't know why you're there, and it's somewhat surreal that you're there in front of all of these people. It's the president, it's the vice president, and all your relatives and your friends and the military people that you served with in Vietnam are all there. So. It's a tremendous experience, but still a little bit foggy at the time.
Not an experience very many people have.
Yes, that's right.
Good question. We have another question? Yes.
I have one, bring it back a little. I was wondering, what was it like to call in air support on yourself and the people around you? How did you feel emotionally about that?
Prior to actually doing that, I got some of my... senior Marines together and told them, look, we're in a situation here now where we're either going to be captured or we're going to be killed. So we don't have very many options here. So we're about ready to be overrun by overwhelming force of about 1,000 against 100. So our only alternative was to call in artillery and air support almost on top of us to stop the enemy from overtaking our position. And so it came very close to where my Marines were. Some of them got hit with some artillery rounds, some shrapnel. Some napalm that was dropped by aircraft burned some of the Marines that were with me. And I wasn't too popular when I made that decision to do that. But nevertheless, you just have to do what you have to do when a situation presents itself.
But no one was captured.
No one was captured. I did have, over the course of 4 days, I had a number of Marines killed and a large number of Marines that were wounded. But most of us survived due to the corpsmen, the Navy corpsmen that we had that are right there at the battlefield, so they're able to administer some preliminary medical services here before they become evacuated. So a lot of us owe our lives to the Navy corpsmen.
And then probably in turn, once you got through that firefight, then the helicopters that were able to evacuate the wounded?
Helicopters were not able to evacuate the wounded at the location that we were at when we had this battle against the North Vietnamese Army. So when it was time for the operation to cease, then we had to carry out all the Marines that were dead and all the walking wounded that I had to an area where helicopters could get in. The area in Vietnam that I was with was mountainous jungle. So it was almost impossible to land a helicopter or to have vehicles. So you had to walk everywhere that you operated in.
It goes back to that earlier comment that you made about not just fighting an enemy, but also fighting with the geography and the climate. We have another question.
Hi, my name is Maddie, and my question is, why do you and other recipients of the medal feel that character education is so important?
Well, first of all, we feel that education is so important because it gives you more options as to what you're going to do with your life. For example, if you associate with people that are not positive, who are not good role models, that reduces your options when you apply for a job, when you apply to a college, and try to improve on your education. For example, I was stationed at the Naval Academy after I got back from Vietnam. And in order for someone to enter into the Naval Academy, just having a 4.0 grade point average is not going to be enough. You're going to have to be a class president or a class officer of some sort, maybe a treasurer. They're going to look for people who do volunteer work. They're going to look for people who have gone out into the community, maybe gone to hospitals, helping the elderly. So those extracurricular are things that have a big role in whether or not you get selected for the college that you want to go to. I think the service academies, when they solicit about 1,100 students, they probably have to interview 15,000 before they pick the 1,200. So, you know, it's very, very important for education. Plus, what you want to do after your education is also important. The more education you have, the more options you're going to have as to what career you want to follow.
Great question and great answer. Thank you. Notice the emphasis there on service academies. And if you take the Medal of Honor, the character values that the character development program features, those are the values that the Medal of Honor recipients themselves selected: commitment, courage, sacrifice, and integrity, and citizenship and patriotism. And when you put those things into action, that's where you have service. So, great. Thank you very much. Do we have another question?
Hi.
Thank you.
Again, when you got home, how did people react when you mentioned that you fought in Vietnam?
When I first got back from Vietnam in 1967, there was a very hostile environment back here in the United States. And in several instances, when I was on some various radio shows, for example, some of the questions were not even questions. Some of the comments that were made were baby killer and why are you there to begin with? Those people did nothing to you. And so it was a very, very hostile situation. And it wasn't so bad for me because I was already a little bit older. I was a career officer, but somebody who was 18 or 19 years old that just spent a year over in Vietnam, and he came back and he didn't have a parade. He wasn't recognized. People didn't like anyone that was in uniform. So it was a very hostile environment, which I think has since been made up here since we've been in the war on terrorism.
Did remaining in the Corps perhaps insulate you a little from the general public's attitude?
Yeah, I think so, yes. I think, you know, if you stayed in the military, you know, you were kind of shielded a little bit. So, and besides, you know, you couldn't dwell on it too much. You know, you're in the military, you got a job to do, and you want to make sure you do that. So that takes the priority. And after a certain period of time, the negative comments about Vietnam kind of died down a little bit.
Thank you. Good question. Important question in the overall context of the war.
And of course, one other thing too is that the educational environment had a big role in bringing the war to the end. As you know, that the colleges, particularly many of them, particularly the eastern ones, were adamantly opposed to the war and wanted it in with demonstrations and so on and so forth. So college students and probably high school students as well played a big role in bringing that war to a conclusion.
Yes, sir.
Hi, so my name is Jared. I'm asking for Deer Valley High School. If you could go back to being a teenager, what advice would you give yourself?
First of all, I wouldn't mind going back to school being a teenager. Let me point that out. I would say to study and study and study. I was lazy. Unfortunately, I was lazy when I was in high school. I could have done, I think, much better than I did. Sometimes some extracurricular things get in the way. Sometimes sports get in the way from your academic work. I think I would spend much more time studying than I did in high school. And I didn't do much studying in college as much as I should have also. You spend a lot of time in the student union, lunchtime playing cards, cutting classes, and as I look back, if I had to start all over again, I certainly wouldn't do that. I'd put my nose to the books a little bit more so than I did.
But didn't you graduate, though, in 3 years from college?
No, I graduated in 4 years.
4 years? Yeah. Was it 4 years?
4 years,
and then went into the service.
And then went into the service, yes, which I think probably in today, graduating 4 years of college is somewhat difficult. It's mm-hmm. almost 5 years, I think, today.
Especially with some majors, you can't actually complete all the coursework if you're going to be.
That's
those
right.
of you who are headed to be engineers, plan on five. So it's a changing landscape. Do we have another question?
I'm Paulette. I'm Michelle.
A little louder, Paula.
My name's Paulette, and Michelle Peterson wants to know, what do you think is the toughest character trait to uphold?
Oh, what is the toughest character trait to uphold?
I think the toughest character trait to uphold is being honest. I think being honest, having integrity, there's so many, you're being pulled in so many directions in today's environment, I think, with technology, with students, and I think being honest and integrity, the kind of person you are, the role model that you are, I think these are the most important characteristics that I can think of. Treating people fairly. Sometimes there's a tendency to treat someone a little bit different for maybe the same offense than you would because you know that person versus a person you don't know. I think those are the traits that I think are important.
Super, good question. Thank you. And thank you for sharing that from, that was one of the questions that has come in off the internet. So as someone pointed out on our internet chat, doing the right thing even when nobody is looking. So maybe we have another question? Yes, sir.
Hi, my name's Brad. And I was wondering, was there an incident when you arrived to Vietnam that kind of just was like, oh, like I'm in war?
Yes. First of all, the minute you arrive in Vietnam, the plane lands, and then you get off the plane, and it's like a blast furnace that hits you right in the face. It is so hot, so humid, that's the first thing that you encounter. And this is why it takes just 5 or 6 weeks to get acclimated. But I think the first operation that you go on, because you're new, the Vietnam War was the first war that I was ever involved with. So the first time that you engage an enemy, first time you hear a gunshot, the first time you hear an explosion, those are things that wake you up to say, well, you know, this is a little bit different environment than I'm accustomed to. So, but once you get over that initial apprehension and that anxiety, things kind of smooth out, and you rely on the people that you've surrounded yourself with. So it's something that you're never going to get used to, but it's something that, you know, if you're going to be in the military, it's something that you're going to have to deal with.
Probably best that we never get used to that.
Never get used to it is absolutely right. One war is more than anyone needs.
And just for the record, by the way, some of the Medal of Honor recipients were actually involved in up to three different wars. Joe Jackson, who received his medal for actions in Vietnam, also fought in World War II and in Korea. So it, you know, those of you who were in the career military often saw ongoing conflicts. We have another question.
Hi, I'm Sophia. What have you found to be the most rewarding part about wearing the Medal of Honor?
Oh, good question. What's most rewarding about that?
Excellent, yes. What's the nicest thing about having received this Medal of Honor is certainly is the people that you meet, getting invited to high schools such as this and talking to young people such as yourselves here. And you get to meet a lot of different people, a lot of politicians. You get to meet a lot of actors, Hollywood actors. You get to go to some great functions. You get to go to the White House, obviously. And in some cases, on more than one occasion, because a lot of times, I won't say a lot of times, but a number of times you get invited back to the White House, maybe for a reception. You get to meet different presidents. For example, if you talk about actors, I've met Clint Eastwood. I've met... a number of others that play in movies and musicians. So, you know, it's very rewarding in that regard. But the other thing is that you see how many generous people there are in this country who are willing to sacrifice their time and their energy and their money to have us come to their cities and have a convention or have a fundraiser for a number of charities and so forth. So there's a lot of rewards. No negative aspects of it, only rewards.
Good question. So do you have a particular favorite of some of the events that you've been to?
We have a convention every year in which all of the living Medal of Honor recipients are invited to. So we go to different cities throughout the U.S., so it's always a time to renew old acquaintances and meet new people and different be invited to different sections of the country. So it's an education process for us as well as anyone else, I think.
Did you go to the Green Bay, Wisconsin convention?
Went to the Green Bay Packer City of Green Bay convention. And got invited down on the field for the coin toss with these gigantic football players that are 300 pounds or more and 6 feet two and three and four. And so it's a very, very moving experience, and it's nice to be able to do that.
Did you have a favorite inauguration that you went to? Medal of Honor recipients are invited to presidential inaugurations, too.
Yes, we get invited to all the inaugurations. although it's somewhat difficult to go back to Washington, D.C. When you're coming from San Diego and California.
Why did he do that in January?
In January. So, you know, it's, but nevertheless, they're very, very interesting. And they're educational besides.
Okay. Do we have another question here? Yes, sir.
Hi. My name is Robert. And my question is, what do you think the greatest challenges our generation faces?
Well, certainly the greatest challenges that you have now are, I think, probably are with technology and all the technology that's going on. It almost seems like once you learn to operate your iPhone and your cell phone, why you have to come up now with driving a vehicle that doesn't really have a driver, but that drives by itself. So I think that's certainly a challenge, all the technologies. And I think we're going to have a big problem with cybersecurity, not only from places like Russia, places from China, but maybe some of these third world countries as well. So I think cybersecurity, the war on terrorism is going to be a challenge for everyone. I think that's going to go on for a long, long time, probably with never knowing what the final result will be. If there is a final result, it'll be something like it just kind of faded away. So those are all going to be challenges. And I think financial challenges, I think, are always going to be a problem, obviously. The population is getting older, so it's going to require more services for elderly. So you're going to be faced with a lot of things. But from looking at your faces, I think the challenges are going to be met here, right here in this classroom. So.
Great, great question and wonderful answer. Yes, ma'am, would you?
Hi, I'm Andy, and my question is, when you were in Vietnam, was there anything that you did with your troops that reminded you of home?
That's a fun question.
Yeah.
I guess that would be during downtime.
Yeah, which there was very little. I spent almost all of my time in Vietnam, right near North Vietnam, and in a jungle. So, you know, there were no women, there were no television, no radios. It was mostly just a lot of work. And when you did have some downtime, what you did is you went back to your base camp and you did some training. You know, you didn't sit around watching television or listening to a radio or that type of thing. You spent your time taking care of yourself and writing letters. And unfortunately, one of the jobs that's required of a commander in Vietnam is that if you get someone who gets killed, then you have to write letters to the parents. And that's probably the most difficult thing that you can do when you have your downtime in a wartime situation.
I have a question that piggybacks on that. My dad was in, and his brothers were all in World War II, and their mom got letters, the kind that you're talking about, but they all came from a chaplain. They didn't come from a commanding officer as a rule. Did you have a chaplain that helped you with those duties?
Not necessarily a chaplain, but you know, a lot of times it doesn't have to be a long letter. It can be a very short note that how well your son did or daughter today did in a combat situation, how much he meant to the unit. He was a good Marine, a good sailor, a good Air Forceman, you know, those sorts of things. It doesn't have to be anything elaborate. It's just a you know, if you write a simple handwritten note to a parent or a survivor of someone who's been deceased, that really kind of goes a long way. Rather than a form letter that someone puts in a typewriter or texts and you sign your name and send it on off. So the more personal you can be when you write a letter such as that, is really something that's going to be more important to the parent or the husband or the wife than some typewritten item.
That's an important comment for all of you to think about in a day when we rely so heavily on texts and emails that evaporate once we hit delete, that a handwritten note can make a huge difference. Good question. We have another question here.
Hi, I'm Zachary. Ed from Virginia wants to know if you or any of your fellow soldiers experienced PTS when you came.
First of all, speaking for myself, I don't think I experienced the PTS. PTSD that you see today. However, I think that particular situation has taken place in every war that this country has ever fought. Although it wasn't called PTSD back in World War I or back in the Civil War, I think this was a term that developed out of the Vietnam War, probably more so than anywhere else. I think in World War II, if you were to use that term, they probably would have called it a Section 8 or something similar to that. But there are a number of my friends had PTSD. I think in my case, where I was a little bit older, and I was the commander. So as a commander, I probably had the easiest job that you could have when in a wartime situation. I'm being a little bit facetious here when I say that. But the hard job goes to those that are armed with a rifle and or some other type of weapon, some private or some private first class. He's really the tip of the spear, so to speak. But for myself, I don't think I've experienced it, but I've seen people who have. And it takes a while to get over, if ever.
Good question. We have another question? Yes, sir.
Yes. Another recipient of the Medal of Honor once said that it was easier to earn the Medal of Honor than it was to wear it. What do you think he meant by that?
Well, I think once you receive an award such as this, I think your responsibilities are increased. For example, first of all, you don't want to do anything that dishonors your medal. You don't want to do anything that brings discredit upon the service, in my case being in the Marine Corps, or any other service. So I think more is expected from you as a role model and how you conduct yourself. You know, the integrity things comes back into play. The honesty comes back into play. The commitment, how you do things, how other people see you and what you do. I think those are the things that that have become very, very important. Going out and speaking to groups such as all of you in high schools or middle schools and colleges and to offer advice and those are things that I think is something that we all don't do enough of. But some people are happy, are okay with that. Some people find it a little bit difficult. It gets us to come out and talk in front of people, you know, which isn't always easy. It's, it takes some work to get up in front of people and to do it and feel reasonably comfortable with it. And knowing what you're talking about is important. If you try to come up before an audience and you're unsure of what you're saying or maybe it's not entirely 100% truthful, people recognize a phony right away. In the military, more so than anybody else. If you're a private and you're looking at a lieutenant, for example, and you see that, his mannerisms or his The way he treats people is not fair, or he's a phony, he's a braggart. They recognize that right away. And once you have that in an organization, you have a lot of trouble.
Let me mention for the audience overall, I'm sure that Mr. Robbins has told all of you this, but for our general audience, it's important to be aware that the Medal of Honor has only been awarded to just over 3,500 individuals in the entire history of this country since that medal was started at the beginning of the Civil War. There are only today 74 living Medal of Honor recipients. So needless to say, with invitations like this, and only of the 74, maybe two-thirds of you get around and do much traveling. There's great demand for them to be in places and to do things, but not a lot of opportunity. So this is an extremely terrific opportunity, both for those of you in this room and for those who are online with us today. Pretty rare, and thank you so much for doing that. This, I think, it indicates a continued lifetime of service on behalf of our Medal of Honor recipients. And to tie it back into the question you asked, which was a very good question, because there are so few, as those of you who are in leadership roles know, like whether you're the captain of the team you're on or the student body president, the spotlight lands on you. And the guys in the back row can be goofing off and get away with it, but the person the spotlight's on can't get away with it. And that's very much what that medal does, is that it draws the spotlight. Do we have another question here?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I'm Dustin. What feelings or memories are provoked when you put the medal around your neck?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I don't wear this for myself. It doesn't belong to me. I'm not the owner, so I'm just kind of, in my particular case, 130th, the owner of this. So I think of sacrifice when I wear this and put this on. I think of the people who are in Arlington National Cemetery, or every national cemetery in the country, or state cemeteries, or even local cemeteries, and the tremendous amount of sacrifice that this country has given up its youth and all the wars that we fought, Revolutionary War, the Civil War, Vietnam, Korea, World Wars One and Two, and just a tremendous amount of sacrifice that young people have made for this country. So this is what I think about when I wear this. I might add too that if you notice on this one here, there are three different types of medals of honor. This one happens to be one that's issued to the Marines, Marine Corps, the Navy, and the Coast Guard. The Army has a little bit different one, which you have one on the back on your board back there. And then that's given to the Army. And then the Air Force has one that is similar to the Army, only it's a little bit bigger.
It's the same award, but it's got a different design that reflects the branch of service.
Yes.
So good question. Do we have another question? We're just about out of time here. We have maybe two or three more questions before we have to wrap up. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Mary from Florida wants to know what your thoughts about the military then and now are.
Oh, your thoughts about the military then and now. What do you think about, maybe the major differences?
Well, I think today's military is much smarter than those that served in our previous wars, our world wars, our Koreas, and our Vietnams. I think they have to be. I know when I came into the Marine Corps, the majority of service people probably read at a sixth grade level. Now, the problem is that the manuals that the military has are written at an eighth grade level. So if you can't read at an eighth grade level, you're going to have trouble understanding the weapons that you're using in the military. And I know the services, when they had enlistees who were not reading at the eighth grade level, there were remedial reading programs to bring them up to that level. So that program, I think, is still in effect today. But everyone is smarter today with technology, with high school graduates being predominantly in the military today versus what it was when you were only a 10th grader or 11th grader years ago. So everyone is either a college student or a high school graduate. And the technology that you've all been exposed to, certainly you're smarter and able to operate in the military environment as it is today versus what it was 20, 30 years ago.
There was a time during Vietnam particularly when students would sometimes say, well, if I can't get into college, I'll join the military. That is no longer a luxury that failing students have, quite frankly. Not that not going to college means you're failing, but you have to be able to meet some pretty solid standardized tests to get into the military these days. There are waiting lists for most of the branches of service at this point. So, the demands are much higher than they were. Mm-hmm. Much more elite force than we had.
Yeah, and in spite of the marijuana thing that we have going across the country today, the military is still adamantly opposed to the marijuana thing, and it's still against the law, the U.S. law, not necessarily the state law, but it's still against the law for drugs. So, and the military is not going to tolerate drugs either. So, you know, if you think you can get away with being in California that has these liberal marijuana laws and then join the military, I don't think so. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, so that bottom line there is that not only do you have to pass the academic test, you have to pass the drug test. Okay, we are down to about 3 minutes. Can we take one more question?
Hi. Receiving the medal means others thought you went above and beyond. Do you feel you did go above and beyond, and why do you think others think that?
I think if you talk to the 72 living Medal of Honor recipients, not one of them will ever say that they deserve this, because that's just not so. I think the probably stock answer that you're going to get is that we were just doing our jobs. We were called to do a job, and we did it, and it's as simple as that. It's unfortunately that there are so many, many more who deserve this that never even get the recognition for the heroic actions in whatever war they were in, whatever service that they were in. So, I just find myself fortunate that I can represent a small part of that. But it's not something that I consider to be deserved, because I certainly don't.
When Bob says that so many weren't recognized, the requirement for the Medal of Honor is that at least two people be witnesses for that. So if there were no witnesses left, then perhaps those medals were not awarded. Mm-hmm. We have only 2 minutes left, and we have some business to take care of with our EdWeb people. So we're going to sign off, but I want to say thank you so much to Steel Canyon and to all the other schools that were signed on out there, High Desert Middle School. I saw schools from New York City, Massachusetts, all across the country. So thank you all for being with us today. And look for, we're taking December off, but we'll start up webinars again probably in January, definitely in February, March, and April for more Medal of Honor interviews. So I hope that you'll all be with us. And you guys did a great job today. Thank you to Steel Canyon. And thank you, Bob, for being here.
You're welcome. You were a great audience. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Lisa, you're on.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm Lisa Schmucke, the founder of EdWeb, and that was just a wonderful interview. Thank you so much, Bob. I know after watching all the interviews with the recipients, I think your humility and the humility of your peers who wear the medal is so impressive in a time when that's such an important value. Steel Canyon High School, you were wonderful. You asked great questions. And Kathy, thank you so much for bringing these interviews to teachers and their students all around the country. So thank you all. And please, if you would like to get more of the resources and watch more of the interviews, you can join the Medal of Honor Foundation community on EdWeb at edweb.net/CMOH.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.